Hello, and welcome back to the Restore Planet podcast with your host, Jack Cole. So today I'm joined by Dr. Gus, who's joining us from Mexico City. So Dr. Gus, welcome. Thank you so much for offering us some of your time and tell us a little bit about your background and what it is that you do.
Thank you, Jack. I'm so happy to be here. I'm excited already. And yeah, of course, I can tell you like a couple of things about what am I doing here and everything else in between. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So basically, well, my background, I studied veterinary medicine here in Mexico. I specialize in wildlife during For a couple of years, I was working in neuroethology. So this is a branch of neuroscience working with primates. Basically, that's behavior that I was working with, behavior and conservation. I was working at the Gulf of Mexico with monkeys in the jungle, but also on institutions. So we were researching on behavior, but checking on the numbers that, unfortunately, as we all know, they're decreasing rapidly. Not only there, but in many other places. And basically, the intention there was to learn as much as we could so that we could develop strategies to help animals in the wild. After that, I had the chance to do a couple of internships, well, externships, sorry, at the Oregon Zoo and a wild and Winston Life Winston Wildlife Safari. There I started working in wildlife medicine with bigger game, like carnivores mainly, but also like a little bit of primates and big animals like what big game like giraffes, elephants, rhinos, hippos, adorable creatures. Very different from what I was doing with primates. And the approach was different, but very, very like very interesting. Also with grizzly bears, like some of the most amazing experiences I had. Cheetahs. And yeah, the approach there was different, of course, because we're talking about like those were centers like Zoo and Portland, but also the wildlife safari. So the medicine you do there is different from the one that you have to practice in the middle of the jungle, which I mean, as you can imagine, the further away you are from a city, the harder it is to practice it. It's amazing, but yet it's hard. But then in at the zoo, the protocols are a lot more established, and I like that at all. Like absolutely amazing to be able to work hand in hand with such big experts, people around the world, just for like small surgery and one grizzly bear, they would call somebody from Germany, like very specialized people. So yeah, I had the chance to learn from those people, like very specialized medicine there. Then I moved back to Mexico, and I've been doing rehab. I don't know how to say it in English, but it's like a certain
Was in
further
Spanish.
studies.
Oh,
Yeah.
okay, yeah.
Diplomas and other specializations in rehab, wildlife or rehab and wildlife medicine in general. So I've been doing that besides other things that are not so, like, I would say, like, they're related to the conservation, they're related to animals. But for example, as I was telling you before we started, I started last year something that maybe gets a little bit away from my knowledge and expertise, but I know it's very important, which is technology. I understand that technology has to come hand in hand with conservation. So I started this platform and learning as much as I could about everything, like in between technology, marketing, and like networking with the people who understand all those things so that I could bring them back to my field, you know? So yeah, in a nutshell, that's it.
Perfect. So tell us, a little bit about some of the research that you did on behavioral neurology of primates? What are some of the things that you discovered in your work?
When I was at the lab, we were working on matrix lines and how the monkeys would behave. For example, there were three different groups of monkeys. We're talking about like 30, well, 29 to 31, because it took a couple of years to monkeys. And there were like 8, 9, and 11 monkey groups, mostly. And the thing is, their interactions were, although all of them were together, the enclosure, it was a pretty big enclosure. And although they interacted, the 30 animals were interacting all the time together. Every now, like once you start with a like a ethogram, which is like really, really taking notes and like taking it to the very, very deep level and understanding every single minute what each individual is doing, you realize that the interactions were very specific. So for example, aggressions would happen more frequently in between a family than between families. You would have expected them to be like they were interacting more between their family members, and even those aggressions happened more frequently. But then again, after the aggression, there was a period of like they would be more gentle, they would approach, and they would try to bond more between those family members. So you're like, oh, okay. It's like my family, I remember me and my brother and sister, like with the siblings, you might get along and you might be tougher, but then you know that you love each other. And, you know, like, I know we say we don't have to anthropomorphize like animals, and we have to keep it like separate, and yes, I do that, but then again, with monkeys and with primates, it's kind of like we're so similar in so many ways. And we discovered these interactions were like nepotism, you name it, so many things that were happening on set time there. Then in the wild, the research was different. You don't get access. I mean, you can check on the monkeys, but the thing is, the interactions are different. You have to be traveling, and in that enclosure, you can sit and watch them and take notes, and you have a video recorder here. But in the wild, they just move 30 meters or yards or feet or whatever. Well, I mean, they move along, and you're like, okay, I cannot see them anymore. And they just move to the next tree, so it's different. Plus, it's in a canopy, like they are very high. You get like, you have to interpret a couple of things, but you cannot get as much data out there. You get a lot of data, of course, but it's not as much as you would get on an institution. So there we had to interact with other researchers. It was not just myself. It was working with the other researchers, checking on their notes. And the research there was a little bit more how to say, like not as specific. It was more about like what's going on with the group in general, what's happening with the interactions with humans now that they opened this ranch, now that they are tearing down the trees in this area and they don't have a clear passage. For example, in Mexico, one of the things that's going on is, like, as you can imagine, there are regulations, but I mean, and now with the drug cartels and things like that, it's getting harder and harder by the time. So they tear down the trees without even leaving corridors. So now we have aisles in which, let's say you had, I was working in the lab, I was working with spider monkey and howling monkey, as well as stump-tailed macaques. The last one's not Mexican, it's from Asia, but we had a community there. But in the wild, we are only working with spider monkey and with howling monkey. And with those, what we were checking is that when these situations were happening, suddenly you have a community of 20 monkeys isolated from everybody else. And you know that if the humans don't help them, they're not just gonna go down and walk, because they don't like doing that. It's very dangerous for them. So they stick to their area where they have the trees. And with the interaction with the humans, all those have become patches where very small groups of individuals are isolated from the other one that maybe was not even that far. Maybe it was just like 2-3 kilometers or miles away. Like, as I said, like not even that far, but there's no corridors now. So one of the things that we're trying is find ways, dangerous as you can imagine, to interact with these people and letting them know we're like, keep on doing that because otherwise they kill you. But leave at least a corridor, at least a couple of trees connected to each other so that the animals can pass from this community to the other community so we can avoid inbreeding. That's only about monkeys, but we're seeing that with every other species. Like we see it with small cats, with jaguars might be a little faster, but still we see that happening with many other animals as well. So
this is a huge problem that we talk about a lot in Europe as well, is these isolated populations and the threats from inbreeding and then accessing food and things. Something you mentioned, that if you're comfortable to talk about it, how do you negotiate that process of speaking with?
I am not doing that. To be honest. No. And the truth is, you cannot so easily. It's like, it sounded even romantic, if you will. Not. It has to be somebody that has the knowledge. At the end of the day, some of these people used to be part of the community, that they were drafted, like voluntarily or not. Yeah. And so some of them, I mean, they speak to their family, they speak to their like community. And so, for example, the guide that, because when we're in the wild, I'm not in the wild anymore, but when I was in the wild, usually you have somebody, maybe not 24/7, but like they're the people that know the area, and these people know the people. So you get to terms, like they are the ones that have access to these people, and you have to be very careful. You have to not threaten their business because of what's going on.
Absolutely.
I am just talking about something that is not even my field. I know that it's happening, but like indirectly I know what's going on. I mentioned this just for like a knowledge purposes, but at the end there are people who know their business, and they're like the ones that are trying. Like there's a project, like, well, it's happening already, a corridor from the north of Mexico trying to go as low as Patagonia, like in Argentina and Chile, for jaguars. Of course, it's not a whole corridor and a beautiful, like, no. They are trying to preserve as much of the land as possible. And those are the kind of people that know how to do these kind of things. It's not easy. It's a very challenging thing, but yeah.
Actually, of course. And you mentioned a few other species there. What's some of the interesting research that you came across? You mentioned grizzly bears, a few other species. What's some of the things that you found in terms of behavior and neuroscience with those species?
In the grizzly bears, I was working with them at the Winston, and America. Also in Mexico, well, not in Mexico City, but in a place, but those were enclosures. It's like a sanctuary, the one that I was working for here in Mexico, and the other one's a wildlife safari. In those areas, there were some ethograms, like the study of the behavior that I was leading, but I was there also mostly doing like vet work, like drawing blood and checking on what's going on inside them, like their physiology. On whatever they needed, we would administer, you know, like it was mostly preventive preventive medicine. Every 6 months, we would try to draw blood. Sometimes some of those animals, they would have how to say, like they were trained, so they would let you draw blood. I don't know if you've ever seen those videos where, for example, monkeys and bears and tigers, they just give you the paw. Like, there's a fence, of course.
Okay.
Like, but there's, I don't know how to kind of like explain it, but there's, from this fence, there is a little protuberance on the fence. With the fence gets wider, they place their paw over there. And at the same time there, they might be licking something like peanut butter or something they enjoy, and they're giving you the vein. You draw blood there, and once we have the samples, we run some tests and see how everything's going on. For example, in the community, like bears and tigers and lions that we had at that Winston Wildlife Safari, they were pretty old. They were very well preserved. Like, we're talking about like lions over 20. In the wild, the male lions, they live up 7, 8 years. That's an average, and that's a normal average. Females live longer, but still in these enclosures, they live far longer because they have all these diets, veterinary care, and everything else. So yeah, the approach depends on where I've been working. It's one of the good things that I have, like the training for rehab, behavior, and medicine as well.
Brilliant. Okay, and tell us now about the platform that you've been working on and developing.
There are a couple of things I cannot mention as of now. I wish I would, because the platform is mine, but there is a contract I have right now with a partnership I have with some people in Australia that are helping me develop it. I had already a platform, but we had to like bring it down and create it from scratch because that's not my field. And there were a lot of mistakes I had there. So they were like, okay, that's a very interesting concept. It's not gonna work if you do it that way, because there were so many mistakes. But then we started creating something, and the platform, the intention, I can tell you this, is that I can bring experts, institutions, and people together in a funny and enjoyable way, because that's the intention. One of the things that we are seeing over and over now is that even with good intentions, social media has become an enemy of biologists, zoologists, and veterinarians who work in the wild. And what I mean is, like, I understand the good intentions, but for example, what happened a couple of days ago, depending on when you're listening to this, but most people have heard or watched the videos of this guy, like, having this squirrel and raccoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in America.
And the thing is, most people are very angry at the person who called the authorities. But the thing is, what he was doing was not exactly what we want to happen, because that was not conservation. That's the opposite of conservation. And don't get me wrong, I appreciate that he was trying his best. Like, I want to be very clear. I don't want to criticize or judge this person. If anything, the problem was that they were making money out of that. That's what we don't say out loud. But I mean, mm-hmm. But let's give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm saying, like, yeah, because I genuinely think that he loved the squirrel. That's the truth. But the thing is, social media has the capacity of making us believe something that is not true. We don't doubt it, because we're looking at people that we admire. There is even I don't even know if it's a movie or a series, and I don't remember if it was in Prime or in Netflix, but it's in a streaming service. And there's this guy that had like ocelot or serval. I don't remember the species of the cat It's a wildcat. And the process, it was not the correct one. Then again, I say his intention is great. I admire the intention. But the thing is, one of the things that we are making sure to create in this platform is all the guidance, or the guidelines for everybody, no matter if it's a 6-year-old or a 25-year-old, if you really love animals, to understand, without having to become a biologist, but to start understanding, depending on each person's level and everything, what is it that we have to understand and what is it that we have to do and we have to avoid with nature. One of the things is that as of now, we are 8 billion people on the planet. We need at least a third of that part of the population to be part of the solution to restore the planet. And it's impossible for everybody to be a zoologist and a biologist, and we don't need that. We need to know the basics and each person to listen to the ones that know how to do it. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I want to do here is not to preach that everybody that says that the squirrel thing is a wrong thing. I don't want to preach. I rather teach, but I want to teach it in there, in a funny way, in an enjoyable way. And also the platform is going to make things easier for projects to fund themselves.
When you say funny, do you mean divertido or gracioso?
Sorry, I didn't get
when you,
it.
When you say funny, do you mean divertido or gracioso?
Uh-huh.
Okay, fun.
Yes.
In a fun way.
Ah, okay, sorry.
No,
in a
okay.
Fun way. In a fun way.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
No, perfect.
When language barriers, but
not at all.
Again, I'm trying my best here.
No, you're doing
so,
fantastic.
The thing is, we want people to enjoy the process, to have a nice time learning. Because I don't know if you've seen this, but over and over, I've watched movies, and especially in American movies, I see that when they mention something regarding learning, and they're like, oh, that's nerd, that's boring, that's what. And I'm like, no, when we are enjoying, like the same person that's saying, oh, that's boring, you talk with them and then you realize they love cars and they know everything about cars. And you're like, you're learning that. You're an encyclopedia regarding cars, if you will. But I mean, it's a process. Like I don't know if you know, but the biggest scientists in the world are 3, 4, and 5-year-old children. They're asking everything. They're interested in everything and they're exploring the world. And I don't want that to be lost. I want to take that and improve it, if you will, like to give them the tools to expand that capacity of people to be amazed and like enjoy nature, because nature is something that we have to like just adore and understand. Nature is not cruel, but it might be violent if you don't understand it. But it's not, it's only testing the models. And we have to understand the way it works and not to interpret it in a, like in an influencer's way. That's what I want here, to help people understand that we don't have to, how to say it without offending, like we don't have to give them human properties so that we can enjoy nature.
Oh, human characteristics.
Exactly.
Anthropomorphisms, yeah, sure.
Exactly. And don't get me wrong, I love Pixar and I love Disney. Like, but we tend to act in that way in social media, and we tend to act that way whenever there is a video of an animal and we start judging them and expecting them to act as if they were humans. And it's like, no, we have to understand them as the species we're looking at, each of them being a different one.
Of course, and just bring it back more specifically, how might this platform bring together, as you say, people, potential students, species, experts, and you know, organizations such as Restore a Planet, such as yours? How would that work, and what opportunities might that offer for?
Well, one of the things is each one is going to be able to create a profile, And depending on the intention, for example, you can be a creator, or you can be just a learner, or you can be supporting a project. And the projects, they have to have an expert there. For example, if you want to, you mentioned you're a teacher, right?
Teacher, yeah, I do teach, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things is, for example, when I was starting this, I was talking to my right now 12-year-old niece, but she was 10 back then. She was like, oh, Uncle Gus, I would love for you to have a space in the platform so that we can do like projects with my school, like my school friends. We can go to the forest and plant some trees there. And I'm like, yeah, that can be kind of cool. And we can do this in a fun way, but do it in the proper way. For example, I mean, this is ridiculous, but in vet school where I studied, this is the largest vet school in Latin America. Yet we have an invasive species of trees there. Of course, we are veterinarians. We're not experts in plants and trees. But for crying out loud, I mean, we're supposed to know better. We are doctors, and we have, like, I don't know, maybe like 100 trees that are an invasive species there. And I'm like, that's a problem. Not only the species in and of itself, but the mentality of, well, that's not my issue because I'm a veterinarian. I only care for dogs, cats, and cows, and horses, and not trees. I'm like, no, we have to know better. We have to do better. And the platform, the intention is for us to do, if we are going to waste energy doing something, we might as well do it right. So the intention is to create these challenges, to learn from people who know, and to bind the institutions around the world. And if you are expert with pandas, okay, there might not be as many panda experts. As a matter of fact, we do have pandas here in Mexico.
Oh, really?
The only ones not belonging to China, because they gave them many years ago. But so there are a couple veterinarians that are experts. But the truth is, you would have to travel to Germany or to San Diego or to most likely to China to learn from pandas. But the intention here is to be able to learn and to interact, because learning, we have it already with so many like channels and everything. But also in this one, the intention is for us to interact with the experts and be part of their crew and to join. You don't have to join all of them. You have to pick one or two that you really love and to be part of that and to learn what they need. Because, for example, in my case, 15 years ago with the monkeys, we needed access to certain areas in Veracruz. We knew a couple of people. We didn't know some others. But with social networks now, we're able to reach more people. And maybe somebody else might say, I have another route. We have another person that might be giving us access to their ranch so that we can keep on building this. Or maybe we needed money, like most projects do. People can interact and know exactly how much it's being spent. And you're part of that. Like, you're not just only giving money to a big nonprofit, but in this case, they know each and every cent, where are you spending it on? And the possibility of learning from them so that children and teenagers know what is it all about and fall in love with these other things that maybe, like, most people know nothing about. You were in Peru yourself. It's like in Amazonia, like, there are people working there, but not many people are well known, unless somebody like actually, how do you say, like, shoot a video and then like played on a streaming platform. What we want is that all those projects can interact in real time.
Fantastic. All right. Well, on that note, Dr. Gus, where can people find you, get involved, perhaps help you with setting up this platform?
As of now, yeah, we already had it. As I said, I already had it. And not many months ago, I would have told you, like, you can join me here. But right now, they can contact me on Instagram. That's the easiest way. It's Dr. Gus, but it's D-O-C-T-O-R, like complete doctor, Gus, G-U-S-S.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure.
Amazing. Thank you very much.